Well, I think we need to call to order our special meeting for the TOD Advisory Group scheduled today, the 25th. Thank you all for being here, and I hope you had all great, you all had a great holiday since we last met. So here's our agenda in front of you, and I'm going to briefly go through it. We're going to have a review of the meeting minutes, any public comment that has transpired, and we have some discussion items. We have four of them, takeaways from previous presentations. We have a roundtable series tonight with multiple developers and panelists, and including the city. That's going to take about 70 minutes. It's going to take most of our time. And we also want to discuss the drafts, letters for the Puyallup Avenue project and a little bit on TDLE Portland Avenue, and then just some communication items. And then we are going to look at the schedule briefly if we have time and talk about the tentative agenda in the future. So with that, let's review the meeting minutes briefly from the 21st. I'm going to scroll down here. Excuse me. Okay, we had a call to order. There was no public comment. We have a new attendee, Laura, replacing Amber Stanley to represent the downtown on the go. Laura, are you in attendance tonight?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. Thank you for being here again. And so some discussion items. Let's see, let's talk about the takeaways from the previous presentations. The first one was the Portland Avenue station. And it was Mark, I believe, from Public Works that made the presentation. Vice Chair Erickson expressed concerns about pedestrian safety on Portland Avenue on the segment under Portland Avenue, under the freeway overpass, and advocated for a pedestrian bridge, which I think others agreed, but it's basically funding based at this point. We discussed, I'm sorry, this is the Portland Avenue station presentation, not Puyallup Avenue. Sorry about that. We talked about pedestrian needs, ridership, comparison to the Northgate Link Extension Station. And we talked about the two options again. We did not have a consensus on where to make our recommendation yet. There's still more study involved. So then we had the BRT project presented by Tina. And she provided an update highlighting the enhancements that the BRT would offer. She talked about the branding concept. I believe the name is Stream, which is pretty cool. And showed renderings of some of the stations. We had discussions and questions about the location, HOV lane usage, and so forth. Any questions on that? The Puyallup Avenue Design Project. That's the one that Mark DeAndrea presented. And we had an overview, including the schedule, the grant summary, and some good discussion about the project. I'm going to go to the next. Oops, I'm sorry. Right here, let's see. I think I flipped down. Yeah. So the next page is here. We addressed parking concerns. We talked about that from the last discussion as well. Summary of the design criteria was explained in the three segments. They are the neighborhood district, the TOD district, and the industrial district. it appeared that we had an endorsement, but to have parking on both sides of the street, and we were, the group was supportive of traffic calming with narrower lanes. And then we pretty much concurred to create a draft letter supporting the scope of work, and that letter was circulated to all of you, and comments came back. We had a lot of great feedback, and we're going to go over those in another part of our agenda tonight. So we're going to talk about how to proceed with that recommendation letter and the next draft. And then we had talked about this. The meeting schedule was deferred, hoping we're going to get to that tonight. We ran over time last month. And then there were some communication items that Jennifer Halverson Kuhn discussed about the BP tag, and reviewed the letter from BP tag to Sound Transit. And we briefly mentioned the future agenda, which is right here in front of you. And we're going to talk about our upcoming agenda as well. There's lots to cover tonight. So I'm going to go back up to the primary agenda. Are there any questions or comments about the meeting notes from December 21st? Okay, Lee Huang, were there any public comments this time around?
Nope, we have not received any comments on any item on the agenda.
Okay. See, I'm getting some feedback here. I'm going to check my speakers. Okay. So the next item is a debriefing and takeaway from our previous presentations. And again, the BRT Transit Project. Let's start with that one. Does anybody have any takeaways from the presentation last month? I think there was some ridership questions that came up, and Tina was supposed to check on it. Tina Lee, and I don't know if you're prepared to give us any ridership updates, Tina. I don't want to put you on the spot, but just put that on your checklist, if you would, please, to check on that.
I will, absolutely. I had sent something to City of Tacoma. I'm just wondering if that was transmitted. If not, I will find that and retransmit.
Okay. Maybe you can check with Lee Huang on that, too.
There, it's on the agenda. You scroll down to communication item number 2. That is the information Tina provided. We appreciate it.
The attachment. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Provided in the agenda packet that went out.
Yes, so it's attachment number 6. It's at the very end. Okay, are there any takeaways or comments on the Puyallup Avenue Design Project? I know you have a lot to say on that. If you have a serious discussion, let's hold that off until we get to that on our agenda. But from last month's presentation, did anything further stand out to you? Well, thank you to both Tina and Mark again for those presentations last month. They were outstanding and informative, and I think it's leading to great discussion and hopefully recommendations from our group. Okay, so I'm going to move right along to the TOD roundtables. This is session number 1, and I'm going to have Brian introduce this series.
Thanks, Imad. And I just want, this is a little bit of background, I guess, for everybody. Over the last couple of months, we've been talking to the chair and vice chair about how to move things forward. And I think folks will recall back early on when the TODAG started that we began by sort of looking at TOD and some examples, and we had a consultant come in and provide some information on that. And that helped get us to the point of at least a draft kind of evaluation matrix that's been used in the past. And unfortunately, with the pandemic and everything that happened there, we shut down for a few months. And as we got back into things, we really didn't pick back up with the sort of background information and sort of knowledge building piece of this. And so the thought was here with these roundtables over the next 3 months to sort of fill in some of the gaps of that information. A lot of folks on the group had been asking about economic development and what does it take to really move the ball forward and get the kinds of developments that we talk about, as well as what are some of the policies that are out there, both at the city and regional level, focusing on transit-oriented development, how do we need to respond to that, and what are even some examples locally, regionally, nationally, that can really inform how we need to think about transit-oriented development here in Tacoma. So this is a series of three roundtables we set up. Here's the first one. It's focusing on the economic development side of things. And over the next couple of months, we'll have more of these, again, to look at policies and examples and things like that. So the idea is hopefully that'll build us to a point where maybe by this summer, we can finalize some of the evaluation methodology and be on a common page for what TOD is, what TOD means to Tacoma, and how we really need to think about and evaluate these sort of significant transit investments. What's the economic development role? What's the city's role? What's the community's role in those things? So that's a little bit of background. Hopefully that'll help to get everyone on the same page and move forward in a little smoother way. And Imad, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I just want to interrupt you before the presenters start. I want to remind everyone that there are a couple of special council meetings tonight that you are welcome to leave and attend if you so desire, regarding the police incident that happened in Tacoma recently. There's a special meeting at 4:30 and another one at 6, which is the Police Advisory Committee meeting. So just a heads up, if you wish to leave and attend those, that's up to you, but we'd certainly like to have you here for this important presentation tonight. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. So with that, I'll turn it over to the panel, and I'll let everybody introduce themselves, or I'm not sure. I know, big thanks to, in addition to all the panelists, to Pat Beard from Community and Economic Development, who helped to organize this as well. So I don't know if, Pat, if you were going to do a little intro, or if we're just going to hand it over to the first person.
Hey, Brian. I'm moving around my house today, so people will see different things behind me at different times. I think our panelists may be a little bit known. Kathy Rines is part of your group, for one, and a developer here in Tacoma. And Jill is a developer of TOD, who was on our ULI technical advisory panel. So I don't think they need tons of introduction. And I think Lee Wong wanted to start with Kathy. So Kathy, please take it away.
Sure. So pleased to be here. Humbled that you asked me, even after sitting on this group and sharing my opinions month after month. So just a little bit about COES. And I know the group is very familiar with COES in Tacoma, but we have 20 projects up and down, really the I-5 corridor from Everett to the north and Salem to the south. And as I put this presentation together, really by and large, 17 of the 20 are in what I would consider to be transit-oriented development areas. And so it's really what we do, and it's a big part of our mission and vision as a company. So kind of wanted to open with that. And I know there was a certain order I was supposed to go in, but you all know I'm a rebel. And so I took it out of order, because before I talked about some of our projects, I wanted to talk about what TOD means to us at COES. And it's all of the obvious things, But it's a place, obviously, where people can live, work, and play. The part for us that's important, oh, Wong, you want to go to the next slide? I forgot I'm not controlling my own destiny here. That's obviously critical because we don't, in our buildings, we typically don't provide parking. And so living in an area where they can walk to work, walk to the places where they play, walk where they shop, the bars, the coffee shops, the retail establishments, that is critical to the success of our buildings. Density that creates affordability and a housing mix. And I say housing mix is, I think most of you know, we very much focus on affordable units. And so our rents typically run 65 to 80% of the area median income rents. That is a number that we target and that we strive for while maintaining financially viable projects, which I think is also critical. But I also think it's important that you have a mix of housing options. So with affordable units, you've also got market rate units that provide a neighborhood that is just a great neighborhood where people would want to live regardless of their income levels. In addition to that, you're looking for a balanced use of the property. So obviously we're in the multifamily environment, but we look for places, and from my perspective, this is, besides transit, one of the most critical. You have to have retail, you've got to have commercial, you've got to have a good mix of use within the TOD area. And then of course you have to have residential. So that's critical for us in the top five. And because I couldn't get into five, you know, several of the bullet points have three or four. And then obviously safe, vibrant, and accessible transit. And we talked about this a lot as a group when we were talking about where we were going to locate the ST3 station there, and how important locating it in an area that was safe and vibrant and accessible to all of the residents in that community was critical. And so as we select sites for transit-oriented development, those are the things that we very much focus on for all of our sites. And that's what's critical for us. And if you were to pull up our website and just kind of walk through all of the projects, you would see that they are all located near transit, walkable neighborhoods, a mixed use of properties. So you've got a mixed use development within those neighborhoods. And that's really what drives our business model. We think also what makes our projects financially viable in the short term and the long term. So this is the project that is near and dear to my heart. So this is Coast at the Dome, and this is obviously located right there on Puyallup Avenue in the Dome District. And as we selected this site, obviously the transit portion of the TOD characteristics was very strong. The pieces of this particular site that I think still require the attention of the city and this group and the neighborhood Dome District is really the piece that's focused on living, working, shopping, and gathering in the Dome District. And that's gonna have to come over time. I think, you know, for me, as we talked last month, there's a balance, and I think Long, you mentioned this, there's a balance between parking today that will help create that vibrancy and bring people to the Dome District, and then not necessarily needing that parking as the Dome District develops over time. But for me, that was a big part of why we came to the Dome District. It was the vision and the promise of a vibrant, affordable neighborhood where people could live, work, shop, and gather. And I hope as a community that we continue to focus on sort of those aspects in the Dome District in Tacoma. This is our MLK project in Tacoma. This one is actually under construction. But the things that attracted to us to this particular project was all of those same things that we talked about with the Dome District. And yet here in the Hilltop, a more walkable neighborhood, more retail. It feels like it's closer to what I would consider to be a really great, strong TOD neighborhood. And that's what attracted us to that. We think that will be a very financially successful project for us. And we hope that it's one of many multifamily projects with retail on the ground floor that will really activate MLK and make it a really vibrant neighborhood. And then the last one that I thought I would just share, this one is actually in Portland. It's actually where I'm sitting right now. It's in downtown Portland, and this one also is another one of our TOD projects. It is located one block away from the streetcar and the MAX line here in Portland. It is downtown, so it's in a very walkable neighborhood. Affordable housing, Portland's increased density, just like Tacoma has, to be able to create that affordability. And like in Tacoma, both of our, all three of our projects in Tacoma, you can see in the picture that we've got retail on the ground floor. And again, that's important to us to kind of help create that vibrancy that we're looking for in neighborhoods where we're building. So, and then we're supposed to end for recommendations for Tacoma. And I have to tell you, this is really hard because I am, many of you know, huge fans of Tacoma as a community, as a neighborhood, as a city, and working with the city, it really is our favorite. The one thing I would recommend is just Tacoma. The reason we love Tacoma is it has a phenomenal transit system. But I would say that also to get a really good, strong transit-oriented development, that transit system has to be balanced with walkable, vibrant neighborhoods, and just making sure that transit isn't always the primary driver in the neighborhood, that the neighborhood itself and creating vibrancy and strong retail environments, walkable streets, where people want to live. I think that's all part of it as well. And so that's sort of my closing recommendation. And I have to tell you, I don't like presenting when I can't see anybody. So, questions? Hello? Everybody left?
No, we're here.
Oh, phew.
I'm just listening.
Any questions for Kathy?
I have one.
Yeah.
We learned, I don't know how many of our committee were there, but there was recently a Sound Transit work group just a few days ago. And we learned both that we don't have much in the way of lower income housing, which would make us more competitive to receive some of the dollars that we could be shortfalled, and also that we might have to significantly boost our third party investment. Is that anything that you guys might be discussing with the company?
Interesting. Lower income, could you define that?
That would be the, I believe, 30% AMI and below. Affordable is 50% AMI and below, and low income is 30% AMI and below. That we learned that we're one of the few, we're basically going to be looking at all the different areas of Sound Transit development. They have to significantly reduce their spending unless we can get federal or state funding. And we learned that our TOD project is one of those that does not have that component. So that could make us substantially more competitive, I believe, is my understanding.
We, in Coast of the Dome, we have a number of units that are 30% area median income and below. I don't know exactly how many off the top of my head, but I would guess it's probably 40 to 50 of the 152.
Sorry, that was the 50% of AMI or the 30% AMI?
30.
Kathy,
are those 152 units, 64 are below 50%, but I believe the vast majority of those are below 30%.
So my understanding then is that you would be one of the few developments in the neighborhood that is doing that then. I don't know if anyone can speak more to that or not.
I don't think
there's any other development at this point.
I was going to say that. I think we're the only development.
Yeah.
Well, I can speak to that a little bit. For the Trax project, the developer has decided to apply for the 12-year multifamily tax exemption, which does require a 20% affordable housing component, I think.
At 80% area median income.
At 80. Okay, so right. There will be an affordable housing component in the Trax mm-hmm. project now. So that's a positive thing.
Yeah.
Do they have a number? Ahmad, like how much percent, Kathy or Ahmad, how many that has to be? 30% of the project that has to be
20% minimum of the project, and I think there's 115 units, so okay. It will be 22 units or so.
20% at 80, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we need to make sure that all that data is included in the Sound Transit when they're looking at our area.
Okay, any other questions for Kathy before we move on?
Is Sue here today? No?
I have a question.
I am here.
Hi, Sue. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, thank you, Kathy, for investing in our community. I'm really excited about your project. I have a couple questions. So I represent the Planning Commission, so I'm always looking for those little nuggets that I can bring forward to my fellow commissioners to help make things a lot easier for developers. I have two questions. So are there any regulatory or land use recommendations that would make, you know, your life easier or future developers? So that'd be my first question. And then is there any sort of like public amenities that we should start planning for to make projects like yours more vibrant and viable and attractive to tenants?
Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing that was really important to us and really helpful when we started developing in Tacoma was the fact that you had gone through the SEPA review process for the entire downtown core, and it extended to the Dome District. Within itself was significant. So all three of our projects to date, none of them had to go through the SEPA review. And, you know, that's real money. That's time that's spent trying to get through that process. Most jurisdictions don't let you do it concurrently. And so that was really terrific. I know we looked out near James Center, doing a project out there, and we may still, but the very first thing we figured out is we would have to go through the SEPA review on that process. So I would say if there's any other areas that it makes sense to sort of do that blanket review for the entire area, that was really helpful. You guys have a great program where you allow FAR transfers. We utilized that on two of our projects. That was terrific. As far as the thing that, as you were talking about recommendations, I think in the Dome District and how MLK ends up developing, just being very focused on creating neighborhoods that feel like a place where people want to live. And the Dome District is still very, still sketchy. We're having a lot of problems with crime at that building. Our residents, where you're through, the residents, some of them that have lived there are leaving because of security issues, because they're afraid. As a community, whatever we need to do to create an environment that feels safe and warm, for lack of a better term, I think that's where we could focus as a community, because that is our challenge at Dome. It's not the rents. The rents are very affordable. It's creating a community outside of the building where people feel safe and where they would want to sit out in the sidewalk when the sun's gone down and have a cup of coffee at the cafe or, you know, something like that. And that's, that neighborhood just isn't there, and it really needs to be.
That's great feedback. Let me ask you kind of a follow-up question just so I kind of understand. So is it, do we have a perception problem of safety, or is that a reality? And then what are kind of those little, I guess, little nuggets that we need to work on to make it feel like a place?
Yeah, so it's a reality, because we get some feedback from our residents, and we are just starting to get that feedback, and we're starting to share it with the city. It's not like, don't misunderstand me, it's not like we've been telling people and they're not doing anything about it. I don't believe that's ever going to happen. The little nuggets, it's going to sound like, you know, little minor things, but it's things like wider sidewalks so that you can have cafes and, you know, ornate streetlights and things that attract people into a true neighborhood. And so it's really that stuff. It's really activating the sidewalks and making people feel like they would be safe and that's a place where they would want to live.
Thank you. So I'll share all the your recommendations and feedback with the Planning Commission. Thank you.
Kathy, it's Janice.
Yes.
Hi, Janice. You know, we're your biggest cheerleaders and fans, and you've done just such an amazing job with that project, bringing it to the Dome District in Tacoma. And sure, the next projects will be just as wonderful, but we wanted to ask you your feeling for how to attract the commercial part of that space to the Dome District, and what specifically you think, you know, you see, you know, going into that space to enhance that community feel.
Yeah. I've always, it's a fairly large space. And I've always thought that that space would be a great location for a brewery / restaurant. With tables outside and a place that would attract, you know, the younger crowd or heck, even, you know, my generation. That's what I've always envisioned the space would be. I envisioned it would be, I think of it like the Northwest area of Portland, which has always been a place where people sit outside. There's very active sidewalks and streetscapes and a lot of retail. And ideally, that's how I envision this neighborhood. And so accordingly, I think that corner place, that big spot would be terrific for a brewery that serves food. And I think then that would start to attract people. And I think to last month's conversation, although I wasn't there, but what I picked up from it, the challenge is going to be sort of a which comes first, because to get people down there initially until there's a very vibrant neighborhood, you're going to need parking. Once you've created this amazing, vibrant neighborhood where people want to live, work, and play, then parking becomes less important. But you have to have it to build it. And I don't, you know, really know where that balance is or what that compromise is, but I would say, you know, that will be a critical part of it, is at least keeping parking in place until you've created the density in the neighborhood that we're all dreaming of.
Yeah, we haven't seen the revitalization happen yet. We're just at the very early stages.
Right.
So I think that's where we see that element being critical in, you know, any type of road redesign.
Right.
Or it could just stymie what goes on down there.
All good questions. Thank you very much. We have to move on. Brian, could you introduce the next panelist, please? Thank you, Kathy.
Welcome.
I'm not actually sure who's next. I don't know, Pat, if you want to do the introductions or.
Yeah.
Is it Jill?
I think it's me, and I'm happy to introduce myself. If that's easy for everybody.
Oh, you're Jill.
Okay. Thanks for having me. I'm Jill Sherman. I'm a co-founder and principal with Edlin and Company, which is one of two successor companies to Girding Edlin. And I'm going to talk tonight about a couple projects done at Girding Edlin that are transit-oriented, developed, and through that, hopefully, you know, be able to hit on some of the things that you're interested in, like what made it work, what were some of the challenges, what would we do differently, you know, if we knew what we knew now, and probably have less on specific recommendations, just because I was fortunate to participate in the ULI technical advisory, the TAC for the Dome District, but I'm not as familiar with the other redevelopment because I'm not as familiar with Tacoma. So I'm going to share my screen, and I am going to start with, can everybody see that okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start with a project called in Portland called 38 Davis, which is in the Old Town neighborhood of Portland, which is basically east of the Pearl District and very close to the river, the Willamette River. So this is a transit-oriented mixed-use development. It actually included an office component, an academic component, a retail component, and a housing component. So we sort of threw in all the mixes. We have 65 apartments that are a mix of affordability, some at 80% and some at 100%, and some that are unrestricted at market. As well, as I said, we've got some office and retail. The parcel was originally owned by Prosper Portland, formerly known as the Portland Development Commission. So they're our urban renewal agency, and we won the right to redevelop through a competitive process. And I guess, you know, this is one of the things I would say, that if you're interested, you know, as a city and you have land ownership, it does put you, I think, in a better position to, as you go out and look for developers to develop that land, to be a little bit more specific about perhaps what objectives or priorities you have for that development. So in addition to, you know, just seeing the land be developed, you know, do you want a certain type of density? Is it important to have certain types of uses? In this case, it was really important to the city and the community to get kind of middle income housing. The neighborhood had not seen a lot of new development. There had been some redevelopment of existing buildings and some affordable housing, but there was definitely an interest in seeing some middle income and market rate housing. And so we responded, you know, with that as part of our plan to be competitive. From a transit perspective, the blue that you see here, that's our light rail. So you can see, you know, we've got light rail running on one side. We have Northwest NATO, which has a parkway in the summer, as well as the Riverfront Park, which is a big place for walking and pedestrians. And I think this idea is important, that it's not, you know, just about the light rail, but it's also potentially about bus, and there could be streetcar and walking and biking and having the infrastructure that allows for all of those things. And I think I would underscore what Kathy said, which is, you know, making district or neighborhood or area successful is never going to be just about one thing. Like if you have the transit, you've got it. Or if you have the open space, you've got it. You need a mixture of these things. You need the open space. You need the transit. You need activity on the streets. You need people feeling safe and comfortable, a mix of uses. So there's eyes on the street during the day and eyes on the street in the evening. And all of those things, you know, are needed sort of together, I think, to get the sort of development and downtown vibrancy that you're looking for. That's an image of the building. You can see a historic building that's directly adjacent to it, and you know, our in design sort of not trying to be an old building, but trying to respond to the historic nature of the district and the cast iron buildings that make it historic. And we actually incorporated some old preserved cast iron columns here in front of the building because we have this kind of large right of way. So we had the ability to actually do sort of a little bit of a public art, and the ground floor, you know, very glassy and with retail and other types and classrooms and other types of active uses. And we actually had sort of an alley in between our building and a neighboring historic building and really tried to design that to activate it and let people walk through. But we also designed in gates so that if needed, we could make sure we could create that sense of security for residents. We also built the building out of wood. And again, has nothing to do with transit, but in terms of getting the design right to attract tenants and kind of the historic nature of the neighborhood and those older buildings were one of the reasons why some tenants were interested in locating. And so we were going for that aesthetic, if you will, even though it was a newly built building. On the financing side, you know, this gets to sort of incentives and how you can use them to, as you know, a city to get some of the outcomes that you want. We did participate in the city's tax exemption program, which required some of the units at or below 80%. That gave us property tax abatement. We got systems development charge waivers on some of the units. In Washington State, you guys don't have really expensive systems development charges, but in Portland, it's like 20 grand a unit. So it's a significant cost. We also didn't build any parking with the project. We actually utilized some parking at a public parking structure across the way. And so all this allowed us to do a very transit-oriented development with, you know, limited, we basically paid fair market value for the property. So it wasn't really significantly subsidized by the city, but we were still able to achieve, you know, some affordability, again, at a middle income range, certainly not the type of very affordable that someone was mentioning, which is units at 30% and below, which is a whole different capital stack typically. And then this is Capitol Hill. Let's see, can you see that? Did I do that right? It looks like it. Okay. So this is Capitol Hill Station. This is in Seattle, right on top of the new light rail station on Capitol Hill. You can see that's Cal Anderson Park. You know, and really this site started with incredible transit as well as, you know, well, a park that frankly has been a challenge over the last year, but you know, in the future, over the long term, and when we originally decided to compete for it, this was a big, you know, urban amenity to have that kind of outdoor space in such close proximity. And this is a rendering. So it's another public-private partnership in the sense that we participated in a competitive process to get the right to develop the land. It was a competitive and an arduous process, which I think Sound Transit would agree with as well. And I like to tell people we're going to finish in March of this year with the last building and wrap up the project. And I actually started working on the project when I was on maternity leave with my son, who is now 9 years old. So it was a process to get from those RFQ and RFP and negotiating an agreement to actually getting in the ground. We have a 99-year ground lease with Sound Transit. So that allows Sound Transit to maintain ownership of the land, but us to have a long enough ground lease that we can finance it. We've got four buildings, below grade parking, about 200 spaces, ground floor retail. Again, that gets back to that activation of that pedestrian realm and having interesting things for people to look at, as well as services available to them. We've got mixed income residential, 110 units are actually at 60%. And then the rest of the units, 20% of the rest of the units are below market. So overall, almost 40% of the units in the overall development are below market. We provided a community room, which had been identified as a public benefit that the community was interested in. And we also developed a public plaza, which will house the farmers market. And we're partnering with the AIDS Memorial Pathway on the public art project. And I would say that public art project and things like having the farmers market and community activities in a public plaza are also ways to kind of create a sense of place, to create a place that people gather, that they want to come, where there are things happening, which gets to, you know, then attracting perhaps retail, which gets to attracting residents to get to, again, that critical mass to have activity. Now, this was a neighborhood that was already very developed in Capitol Hill. So it's not like we had to come in and sort of create all of that, though I would say this area on Broadway was perhaps, you know, had a little bit less going on than other parts of the hill. But that's very different context from a context like the Dome District, which is in a much earlier stage of kind of having that vibrancy and activity and mix of uses be sustainable. This is a site plan. You can see the plaza really being sort of the heart. We have a lot of sound transit infrastructure that we sort of had to design and then construct around. And then this slide just kind of focuses on some of the elements of transit-oriented development that sort of gets to the fact that it's not just about having great transit. I mean, obviously that's a precondition for transit-oriented development, but that in and of itself is not going to make it successful. So there's a festival street that can be closed and activated. There's the plaza that'll house the farmers market, the proximity to the park, the public art installation. Whoops. Broadway is here. There's a dedicated bike path, so it's easy for bikes to get around. You know, we've created outdoor spaces that overlook the plaza and the public areas. And ground floor, very glassy and permeable and all programmed with some kind of retail or other kind of active and public uses. This is just a rendering of the plaza. This will be one of the large public art installations, though it will look nothing like this. This was sort of early when we didn't know what it will look like. And I will stop sharing. And just, you know, by wrapping up again, I think it's, you know, it's not just about the transit. So you need to be thinking about other aspects of kind of what makes neighborhoods successful. Kathy talked about that a lot. And I think I would certainly echo that. And then, you know, using, I think, the idea of public land ownership to make sure projects are achieving public policy objectives, as well as having incentives to help support those. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jill. We had information that there's going to be panels. I have a question, first question. Based upon that first initial incident, having developed in Portland, what are some of the maybe TOD similarities that you see in the state, maybe you're not so familiar with Tacoma as you are Seattle. What are some of the similarities and differences of the TOD development projects between Portland and Tacoma?
Comments of property damage and violence.
Gary's mic is on.
Gary's mic is on. We can hear the meeting.
Gary.
Information that
Gary, please turn there. There you go.
So I do think that, you know, the development I talked about in Portland was in a part of downtown that has certainly seen much less development and revitalization than other parts of the city. So, you know, in that respect, it's probably a little bit more comparable to some of the locations in Tacoma, but it did already have a number of, it didn't and still doesn't have a lot of market rate housing. It had some subsidized housing. It's a part of the city that has a lot of social services, which will stay because that's where they should be located. But I think bringing market rate housing and office and other daytime uses, so it's not about the social services needing to go away, because those are important services that our community needs to provide. It's, I think, having a balance of social services and affordable housing and then market rate housing and commercial space. But safety is important and both the perception and the reality. And so we did find that, you know, we did end up having to install gates so that we had the option to close them if we needed to, for residents to feel secured, because we knew the project would not be successful if we ultimately couldn't lease the units and lease the space, right? Nobody's goals would be achieved that way. I think too, you have in the Dome District, I mean, you have giant blocks. That's harder. You know, Portland's block system of 200 by 200 blocks. You know, not that you're going to change your block sizes, but I think that gives us, it's a little bit easier to create something that feels pedestrian friendly, you know, because of that block size and sort of just that module. which I think is an advantage Portland has over some other cities. And then, it, you know, in general, there's been a lot of investment in open space and transit. I think, you know, Tacoma's definitely invested in transit, but I think those also the open space and the arts community and the things that, you know, maybe some of your folks who are willing to be pioneers in a district that's perhaps a little bit less developed, and making sure you've got sort of the attractions and infrastructure that people are looking for.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Other questions, thoughts?
I have a question.
Go for it.
Okay, I never know how this works if it could be called on me. Well, Jill, thank you so much for presenting. I love your projects. I'm a former Portlander, and I've always said that Tacoma kind of feels like how Portland was in the 90s, so I feel like we're getting there. You mentioned there was kind of an RFP situation or arrangement with some of your projects. For the Dome District, do you think that should be something the city or Sound Transit should do, like maybe acquire properties and then put it out for RFP, or do you think that we should just wait for the private sector to come to us?
Well, I think if you, I mean, I know Washington State, it can be a little more challenging because, I mean, we have urban renewal, right? And that has allowed us, that has allowed urban renewal districts and Portland, Prosper Portland, our redevelopment agency, to have funding to acquire properties, you know. But I think if you can acquire key strategic properties, I mean, then you're in a position where you can go out to the development community, you know, with your priorities, you know, either for how it's designed or developed. And I'm not saying you want to be so prescriptive, because ultimately you want flexibility because the market is always changing and you want developers to be able to be responsive to that so that the development is successful. And you don't want to put so many requirements in there that developers are like, oh my God, that, you know, there's no way we can make this feasible. But it does allow you to say, you know, hey, we would like to see, you know, some open space at this corner, for example, if you got the RFP. And if you have incentives to help support some public amenities or public benefit, you know, that's all the better, right? Because then you can say, we want to see X and we have Y to help support it.
That was very helpful feedback. Thank you.
Any other questions from anyone?
Yes, if I may, this is Christine Wolf with the Port. I'm just curious, both of you, and thank you very much for the informative presentations. Both of you were sort of talking a little bit about the chicken and egg conundrum. And the other thing that I'm wondering is, most of the examples, or at least as far as I can tell, maybe all of the examples were more in kind of neighborhood situations. The Dome District does have that already to some extent, but overall you're bounded by I-5 on the south. You know, there's the Dome, then there's 705 on the other side, and then across the street you have a heavy duty industrial area and a major rail yard that won't go away. And then, you know, you have the transit center that is getting an expansion. So I'm just wondering, you know, what are the economies of scale and the kinds of underlying conditions that you would need in order to make a TOD development that includes housing make sense? You know, what's the scale? How much clustering do you need in terms of residential development to be able to get where you would want to go?
I can take sort of a first pass at that, because as you were talking, I was thinking about, and Jill would be familiar with this, in Portland, there's two very distinct neighborhoods that are separated by 405. And one is the Northwest District, the other is the Pearl District. And I think about where we sit here in the Dome District, and how the 705 separates us from the brewery district and from the university district and downtown. And yet in Portland, between those two districts, they've pretty much grown together. Both of them are their own unique neighborhood, but they very much blend. You don't even notice when you walk under the freeway from one into the other. And I think that's what we need. It's one of the reasons why I suggested a brewery, not that the brewery is necessarily the right answer, but something like that, that connects the neighborhoods together and encourages residents in one neighborhood to walk into the other neighborhood, even if it means walking under the freeway. And it happens all the time. I stayed in the Northwest District on the Northwest side last night, and I walked into the Pearl District. And it's, I think we could easily accomplish something like that here between Dome and the other side of the 705.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the key there is there's lots of ways to get from one to the other. There's lots of connect, like on a bike or walking or car. So it's easy. It's safe. I mean, there's light. I guess, you know, it's not that we don't have street, you know, issues or safety issues on our streets, but generally, like, there's lighting, you know. And I think enough residential that you've got eyes, you've got people watching, right? So you have people on the street already. And I think all those things help.
That's a really great point. There's lighting, the streets are well lit, and they're activated. And so there are people out. And I think, again, in my mind, with those two things, these two neighborhoods could easily blend if we could get, you know, density and retail and kind of just continue to do what we always dreamt we would do here in the Dome District.
You know, my perception of the Dome District when I got to spend a little time was, I mean, it still feels pretty like big, you know, and I think you should got to focus, like you've got to maybe prioritize a couple streets with a couple intersections where you really try to focus the energy to start, because I think it will be challenging if you have kind of scattered things and they're hard to get to, or it's the walk to get from one to the other is unpleasant. You know, you need, people want a reason to cross the street, right? And so if you can kind of focus that maybe on a few streets to start with, I feel like that can make it a little bit more manageable to get a critical mass. Start to have that feeling of vibrancy.
Yeah, just something to add to that that kind of has gotten forgotten in some of the public amenities that are available in the Dome District, and that is McKinley Park, which is, you know, a really convenient park to most of the residents. They might not venture up there, but you have the other open space at the Carr Museum that they've talked about trying to joint partnership with developing that open space to make that a outdoor theater or some other kind of public amenity for the residents in the area. And then you have the new waterfront park that is scheduled to also be a part of a walkable, you know, attraction in the Dome District. And we forget about connecting the Thea Foss Waterway residents as well. And I think I like Kathy's idea of connecting the Brewery District, because you do need things to walk to. And with more amenities available in other communities, that's always, I think, a benefit. But it's a big district. You're right, Jill. How do you, I think the idea of that you brought up about focusing is going to be helpful to making that successful.
May I?
Rick, go ahead.
Thank you both very, very much for presenting. I'm kind of one of the old timers other than Don here. Jory and I owned property on the other side of Cal Anderson Park back in the 80s when it was very similar to the Dome District. It was an industrial wasteland and very scary to be on the street late at night. And now I think all of you know what that's like. It just, it's blossomed and become a neighborhood that everyone wants to be in. And so I have hope. And I think the Dome District is large enough, Ryan, to have all of those amenities to make a true neighborhood, even with, given the surrounding transit limitations of the freeways. And as Kathy said, linking the Brewery District with the Dome District is, if that starts to happen, it will just make those two neighborhoods be one neighborhood, be one big neighborhood. And that can flow into the downtown, hopefully, with the Unico's property of the Washington Building. We're really excited about that energizing the downtown as well and flowing all those. But thank you very much, both of you, for your presentations.
Okay, we have a couple more presentations, I believe. Pat, can you kick us off with the next one, please?
Yes, here I am. And I am going to attempt to share my screen.
Is it just you, or do we have another one after you?
It is me, our third real estate developer who was going to be on, was fortunate enough to get his COVID-19 vaccine. However, he had a little bit of not anything really horrible, but he's not feeling that well after getting it. So he had to make his apologies to us for tonight.
Okay.
Well, I'm getting here. Okay, we're there. Now I just have to find the little screen thing. I think I'm there. There, we're there. Okay, everybody. Well, I'll introduce myself. My name's Pat Beard. I work in the Community and Economic Development Department at the City of Tacoma, and I've been with the city for about 7.5 years. And as with almost all city employees, we have a really broad scope of roles, but one of the roles I've had the privilege of serving in is assisting with some of our work surrounding transit-oriented development. So I'm going to start from the super high level and descend back down to earth. And this is a slide that we got from a survey that HNTB Corporation did. That company actually is a consulting, I believe it's a consulting firm that works on massive transit projects. The top reason that people want transit-oriented development is to get to stop driving their car. And then you can see, and these aren't going to be of any surprise to you at all, but it kind of shows why people would be attracted to transit-oriented development or think positively about that type of development. And then similarly, from the same company, their survey of why would people want to live there and who would want to live there? And you can see the millennials far and away like the idea of living near transit and what I say is, quote, ditching the car. So I think that as Rick and my generation move on, we're going to see more and more transit-oriented projects coming online. So I have a map here that shows the Tacoma Dome Link. So the Tacoma Dome Link is where for the past 6 years or so, the city has really been focusing its attention on transit-oriented development. Our community strategic plan adopted by the city council is called Tacoma 2025, and it includes a goal towards increasing transit-oriented development. So we focused on trying to bring projects and increase projects along this light rail corridor. And this map is a little bit dated because I did not have time to update it to current. But in the 2 years between 2017 and 2019, we had 19 projects come in along the light rail route, and one of those being Kathy's Coase Puyallup project. And there, these 19 projects represented 1,232 new housing units and both market rate and affordable housing units included. Not all of the projects are mixed use. Some of them are mixed use. So then they want to talk about specifically the city's role in terms of economic development's role in attracting, and that is not in any way to discount. And in fact, I think one of my colleagues who was in advanced planning had said that in our department, we're the closers, which we kind of are, because planning has already done the great work to do the SEPA pre-approvals and all of those things that really make development happen in Tacoma. So we are allowed, as Jill kind of referenced, to actively solicit for development only on limited sites. We just can't go out and say, oh, you should come develop XYZ property. We either have to own it or enter an agreement of some kind to be able to market that property. So the city of Tacoma doesn't own tons of land. That's great for transit-oriented development. And we actually really don't like owning land at all. So in this case, in the Dome District, we entered a partnership with Pierce Transit that did own a surplus property in the Dome District, right across from the Sounder Station, as it turns out. And in partnership with Pierce Transit, we issued an RFQP, which is a request for qualifications / proposals. We did this twice, actually. Our market has vastly improved over the time since 2013 to now. And so in our early days of trying to solicit development, sometimes we wouldn't even get a response. Now we're not having those kind of challenges, but we did have to issue this RFP twice and got this great project called The Tracks, located at 415 East 25th. This project, as Jill referenced, sometimes these projects take a while to actually come out of the ground. But as Imad referenced, and Imad is a project architect, they have applied for their multifamily property tax exemption. So that's a good sign that this project is moving forward. Now, in the Stadium District, which we saw as very ripe for transit-oriented development, but extremely constrained land-wise, we never RFP'd any sites, but we did have verbal agreement with Tourmaline Capital, who was the prior owner of the Titus Will sites. Those are the sites where the Stadium Thriftway and the parking lots across are. So we actively marketed these sites, one of which, of course, went to commercial with the Rhine House as an anchor, and the other one went to the Stadium Apartments. The Stadium Apartments, developed by Carino Associates, is right on the light rail and is a great project. And they also use the Transfer of Development Rights program that Kathy mentioned. And excuse me, because my allergies are acting up. Then in the Hilltop, we were able to work on a few different projects. So the city, and you may not even be aware of this, has a community redevelopment authority. And that is a separate entity from the city, but it's fully run by city staff and it has its own board. They meet monthly. So in the case, as someone was mentioning, should the city be buying properties? Typically, as I said, we don't like to own properties, but in this case, we bought this property at 9th and Martin Luther King Jr. Way. We issued two RFPs for this site, one for affordable housing and one for more workforce of market rate housing. And Coase Development, Kathy's company, is doing the more workforce related project, and Mercy Housing is doing the affordable project. And these are both in construction right now. And then also in the Hilltop at 11th and MLK, we entered an agreement with the Washington Department of Commerce. They owned a property right there, a pretty big property, about an acre and a quarter. And this is another case where this was in 2013 when we negotiated this agreement. We issued an RFP. We got absolutely no responses. So undeterred, we kept trying and we got a great project, and it's a beautiful project called Aspire 11. I'm going to have almost 200 units in it. It's mixed use with retail on the ground floor. And that is going to be breaking ground this spring. And Tej, who was hopefully to speak today, they are the developers of that project. So the things we've done now that kind of out of public properties and talking to developers, but developers of multifamily are now coming to Tacoma. We don't have to chase them as much anymore because our market has greatly improved. And I did want to mention, even when a project such as Coase Puyallup isn't the result of an RFP directly, it might be the result of an RFP because we actually met Kathy when she proposed to develop on the dome site that we offered. So that was pretty cool. Then they got very interested in Tacoma, started looking around, and now doing three projects in Tacoma. And coincidentally or not, they were introduced to us by the Carinos, who did the stadium apartment project. So that kind of shows how things can build on each other. But right now we've been in a more of a kind of looking forward mode. So we did the Urban Land Institute Technical Advisory Panel that you've heard the report out. And right now what we've been doing is studying the activation of under an elevated rail line. So as you recall, the likelihood is that what we're calling the Tacoma Dome Link extension will be an elevated rail situation and an elevated station situation. So this is very preliminary. We haven't even talked to Sue Comas. I don't think he even knows we were kind of looking at this, and admittedly has gotten a little sidetracked by the pandemic. But we started looking, and these are pretty cool. Like this one in Mexico, they've got a playground under the station. This one here in Toronto, it's just an activated space. This is what's going on there now. They have an ice skating rink under it. During the summer, they have other kind of events under it. Then I love this one in the Netherlands, which they have the kayaking under the light rail. I love that. And then the one that kind of reminded me of Tacoma was this one in Tokyo, which people have kind of envisioned if there was a close to sounder option ultimately selected. Could something like this happen at the Freight House Square, which, you know, this even looks a little bit like the Freight House Square in terms of the scale. So that's kind of what we are thinking ahead about in terms of specifically the Dome District. We think that all of us using our creativity and our great partner at Sound Transit to think about, do we want to activate those spaces under the rail? How are we going to do that when it happens? And kind of getting ahead of it so it's not built and done, and then we're scratching our head with what is the space under that rail going to be used for? And I am also happy to answer any questions and appreciate the opportunity to present to you.
Thank you, Pat.
I don't know if I stopped sharing though. Did I?
Nope, we still see it.
Okay. I don't want to do it.
Any questions for Pat?
There, I did it.
My only question, Ahmad, is this going to be linked somewhere again? I forgot where that link is. Can you remind me where that would be so I can look at some of the projects?
Say that again. Is it going to be linked anywhere?
Yeah, the like Pat's slide deck or
yeah.
anything like that. I know it's usually part of our notes anyways, but that's usually sent out, right?
Yeah, I think Pat's presentation was part of the agenda packet you received. And the other two presentations were not, but I'm assuming we could probably get those.
Yes, this is Li Huang. The agenda packet is posted on the TODEX webpage, as you are aware. In addition, all the presentations that we see at a certain meeting will be posted after the meeting on the same webpage, so you can always go back there and check them out.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Pat or the other two panelists?
Pat, I'm curious. One of the things that's been brought up by a number of the speakers is the potential opportunities that arise out of city or other publicly owned properties. Obviously, at the end of the day, Sound Transit will probably have some publicly owned properties that they can make available. And Pierce Transit obviously has had some that's helped to generate the tracks project. Do you have a sense for significant city-owned properties, or has there been discussion about reutilizing city-owned properties in the area?
The only one that I know of at the moment, we have a project coming in at 25th and Pacific. And when we were talking about connecting the brewery district and the dome district, that project strikes me as particularly attractive for helping with that objective. And that project is likely to be partially built on city-owned land right there near the Sounder tracks. So that one's there, but we weren't marketing it. It was next to a site that the developer wanted. Once the decisions on the routing and the stations for the light rail are made, then, of course, the city and Sound Transit will be in close conversations about what staging areas, construction areas that they might be acquiring that in future could be disposed of. But other than that, what the city owns in the Dome District is the Tacoma Dome. There have been discussions about the parking lots at the Tacoma Dome. There's about 20 acres of them. So that is a really good future opportunity. But there isn't any current, other than, believe it or not, continuing discussions with Topgolf to potentially go up there. I haven't seen any movement towards issuing an RFP for housing up at the Dome at all. Was that sort of what you were asking, Brian?
Yep. Okay, does anyone else have any further questions? If not, we'll move on to our next segment of the agenda. Thank you very much to all the presenters, Kathy, Jill, and Pat. We appreciate your input and answering our questions and your presentations. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to share my screen again. And let's see here. I think I have the right one. Let's see. Oh, boy. Let's see here. Just give me a second, please. Are you seeing the agenda? Yes? Great. All right. So we're going to move on to discussion item number 3, which is the Puyallup Avenue design project, and regarding the letters of recommendation, draft 1 and 2, and we'll talk about your comments and all the processes that we've gone through and we want to move forward with. We're going to tag team. Vice Chair Erickson's going to help me out, and also the city staff, Brian and Lee Huang, will be assisting as we go through this. So I'm going to scoot down to the attachments here. Give me a second. So here we go. Okay, so you're all familiar with the draft letter number one. I'm not going to go into it in detail, but it was sent out to you and to everyone, and we received, correct me if I'm wrong, Lee Huang, about 14 or 15 different comments. Right? Okay. And so there were a lot of great comments. Some were very detailed, and some were generalized, and we've summarized those. And I'm going to briefly show the summary of those comments. You've all received or looked at this packet, I hope. So starting with this slide, the summary of the comments are basically, they're broken down into categories for ease of, discussion or dissemination. So the first one is parking on Puyallup Avenue. Lots of comments there. Second one is pedestrians and bicyclists. The third is HOV transit. And as we go on, freight mobility. Number five is section specific comments regarding the draft letter. And these are the various comments from that. And number six, just some general comments. So back to the top of this. Again, the intent is not to go through each and every comment, but that you all had great insight and great feedback to our letter. And one thing that we realized is that we probably ought to take a step back and redraft the letter based on your comments from a basically a higher generalized level so that we don't get into all the details right now. We know there's going to be a design effort in the future when the funding occurs and so forth. So what we've concluded is we'd like to do a draft number two, which is also attached, that is more general but is inclusive of pretty much all the comments. So here's that draft letter two. It's just an outline at this point. And we want to be very, again, general in our statements so that we address all the needs in consensus and address policy issues. And so this draft number two is right here in front of you. We're going to briefly just go through it and show you where we're headed with it. So the idea is to state very clearly and succinctly several key items of our recommendation. And A would be, we support the city's effort in securing the grant with the Puget Sound Regional Council. And we urge PSRC to allow maximum flexibility in design. That's our number one statement. Now you'll all get a chance to comment on this as we go through the discussion. So item B, we want to highlight the TOD design principles that we've been endorsing all along. And those are the five there in front of you. They're no surprise, but we want to highlight those principles to be used in the future design. Item C, we're going to recommend the following considerations and priorities, excuse me, at a high level in principle. And these pretty much summarize all of your comments. So I'm going to just go through each one of them here. The first one is three distinct districts. We want to recognize that there are three distinct character districts and areas along Puyallup Avenue that Public Works has identified for this corridor. And we want to apply distinctive yet compatible design considerations for all these areas. And they're just simply stated here. So that's the statement we want to make. Number two, there are pedestrian-oriented amenities that are important. We want to provide crosswalks, wider sidewalks, with appropriate amenities and features where feasible to ensure a safe, comfortable, and friendly walking environment and experience for pedestrians, particularly in segment two, which is the TOD district between D and G. Okay, so I think that covers a lot of people's concerns so far. Then there's bicycle connectivity. We want to provide protected, connected bicycle facilities along the entire Puyallup Avenue corridor. We think that's a fair statement. Transit HOV lane. Provide a designated transit HOV lane on one side of Puyallup Avenue, as Mark has been speaking of at Public Works, which is part of the funding requirement. Provide traffic calming. Various methods and devices in the cross-section design and traffic operation on Puyallup Avenue throughout the corridor and the adjacent streets. That, again, was one of several of you have made comments about that issue. Want to maximize on-street parking. Maximize and maintain on-street parking along Puyallup Avenue in the TOD district without sacrificing item number two, which is pedestrian-oriented amenities. We want to keep this corridor activated, especially in the TOD segment. So we don't want to sacrifice parking for pedestrian amenities. So we made that statement without sacrificing item number two above. Inclusion of parking along the adjacent side streets is also desirable. So we're not saying how much or which side gets parking. We're making a general statement. Freight mobility. We want to accommodate safe and efficient freight mobility and truck maneuverability to the extent possible without adversely impacting items one through six above. So there's going to be some level of trade-off for those items one through six and freight mobility, but this was an important aspect that came up as well because of the significance of that corridor for moving freight. So number eight is adopted planning policies. This was a big one for the members of the Transportation Commission, if I'm not mistaken. So we want to, a general statement is to maintain consistency with the South Downtown Subarea Plan and the Transportation Master Plan to the extent feasible and consistent with the priorities in items one through seven above. But we're not going to get into the weeds of all the different sections of the master plan or the subarea plan, but we want to make that statement clear that we should be consistent with those policies already approved for the city. And so those are the eight items under the recommended design considerations we want to put forth in draft number two. And then item D, we want to include the diagram of the draft concept we had before, which is down here. This was in the, we talked about this extensively at the last discussion. So we want to include that draft concept. And we want to illustrate a possible optimal cross-section for Puyallup Avenue between C and F, and that's what that depicts. And we want to acknowledge there may be potential adjustments, trade-offs, and compromises that will need to be considered during design phase. So we're not going to have everything, but this is sort of the optimal cross-section, knowing there's probably going to be some trade-off as we get into design. And then finally, E, as the project moves forward, TODAG will elaborate on the above-mentioned design considerations, gauge community's interests and concerns from the TOD perspective, and be a sounding board for specific design details. So we want to stay engaged. That's the statement here, basically, as design begins. Now, I'm hoping, or we're hoping, that this covers all of your comments and concerns in generalities so that we can redraft this letter as a recommendation, which I believe goes again to the Transportation Commission and the Planning Commission, if I'm not mistaken, Brian.
Yeah, Imad, can you just clarify one thing? I think when you were talking about, obviously, the on-street parking is on here, and a lot of the discussion over the last few weeks and in response to the first draft was about parking and how important is parking in relation to other amenities like pedestrian amenities and bike amenities. Mm-hmm. Can you, I guess, clarify in how this is structured, how the parking is treated from a prioritization perspective relative to pedestrian amenities and bike facilities and transit facilities?
Well, I think item number 6 speaks to that. And a lot of you said, yes, we want parking along Puyallup Avenue to be maintained for obvious reasons, accessibility and activation of those future spaces. However, we don't want to compromise the pedestrian-oriented future aspect of that neighborhood. So we don't want to compromise it, meaning we'd rather have wider sidewalks with activated spaces for future cafes, excuse me, as Kathy had mentioned, or access to those wide sidewalks for the public. That's sort of the gist of what this is saying. I'm sorry. Don, go ahead.
Yeah, what I heard today in the presentations, excellent presentations, is there's a need for the parking in the near term and maybe the foreseeable future. But in the long term, as the area develops, we get density, we get retail, that parking is going to be less so. We're going to create our own market basically within the Dome District. So I would like to see language that says for the foreseeable future or in the near term, with the understanding that in the future, we're going to then use that space that was on street parking for widened sidewalks and amenities, restaurants and cafes and the other types of things that are going to make this really an exciting, viable neighborhood.
That's a great point. Thank you.
I don't want to speak for Mark, but I know one of the things I think that he's mentioned before is, you know, obviously once the streets gets designed and built, this is like the 50-year, you know, design, right? We're probably not coming back and modifying the streetscape anytime soon. We haven't touched Puyallup for a long time, and we probably won't touch it again. So certain things like where the curb is, which is determined by how many lanes you've got and whether you have street parking and other things like that, are pretty critical. So while I think, yeah, there is certain flexibility over time with some of the amenities, it is important to recognize the long-term reality of building a streetscape and how long it's going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, Lee Huang, could you speak to the fact about saving the draft letter number 1 for our future reference?
Yeah, sure. Sure, Chair, but I know other members would like to speak. Should I go ahead and
briefly mention that, then we'll ask for comments.
Okay, great. So the idea is that the draft number 2 letter will be drafted based on the proposed approach outline that you are looking at, subject to fine-tune or modifications based on our discussion right now. And the draft number 1, the letter that you have reviewed and your comments and the summary of comments and all the discussions that you can review back based on the meeting notes, those work will be saved and on file and to be revisited later as needed as the project progresses. In other words, all our effort to this date is not wasted at all, is not lost. It will be saved for future review, because this is, all the comments are very important, very valuable feedback to Mark when he continues to work. And so from this point on, what we need to do is to express our support for the city to get the grant and proceed with the designs. And factor in the design considerations and principles as listed out on this outline. is we need to get that to Mark and Transportation Commission before the commission's next meeting on February 17th. So the idea is within the next couple of weeks, we would like to have the draft 2 finalized. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So let's open it up for comments. What do you all think about this this approach and how we've assimilated your comments? Justin, you want to go ahead?
Sure. I just have a couple of clarifying questions maybe for the chairs and then I think maybe Brian as well. So what is the objective of this letter? Like what is the, like, what are we trying to accomplish with this letter?
Well, I'll start by answering. I'll try to answer. The objective is to make a recommendation like we did with the Tacoma Dome station area recommendations through the Transportation Commission, ultimately to the City Council and the Mayor, about the Puyallup Avenue corridor design. And that's the goal.
Okay. So I've been a Transportation Commissioner for going on 8 years now. We've never wrote a letter to accept a grant that we've already applied for from PSMC. So Brian, could you explain to me, if this letter doesn't go to PSRC, are we not getting the grant? So what are we trying to, I understand that we're writing a letter to encourage the city to accept a grant that we applied for, but that doesn't tell me what it is that we're really trying to do, because that doesn't make sense to me. Can you elaborate maybe some of the administrative functions here that we're trying to figure out or solve?
So ultimately, it'll be the city's decision on whether or not the city moves forward with the grant that we applied for. What happened was the Public Works Department, as you know, has been working for a few years now to try to figure out a design concept for Puyallup Avenue, which is a very difficult corridor because there's simply not enough space to put everybody's everything in it. And so Public Works came and essentially said, hey, let's recognize that this grant, which is a big opportunity, also comes with the reality that we need to accommodate at least a bus lane on one side. And that does create certain design constraints. There's lots of positives there. And so Public Works was really asking for some early input from the TOD advisory group on whether or not the advisory group had any significant heartburn, I guess, with moving forward with the grant, understanding those limitations.
So just a couple more clarifying. So the grant that the city sent on didn't have the bus lane incorporated with it?
No, it does.
So really the effect of this is to encourage the city to change what they applied for?
No, I think, as far as I know, the TOD advisory group is probably recommending to continue on with the grant and continue on with the bus lane.
A letter technically doesn't need to be sent to PSRC to get money from PSRC for what we applied for.
No.
Got it.
No, this is, as I said, this is really a request at some level from, you know, we have another advisory group now directly involved in Puyallup Avenue.
Yeah, I think right. I'm just saying to have a clear understanding. Money, Brian, for grant. This letter doesn't actually change anything that we applied for. The letter isn't needed to get money. This is really just trying to guide the staff for future of how to design within the parameters of the grant that we have already applied for.
Yep. I mean, the basic question to everybody has been, should we continue on with the grant or not? Or should we go back to PSRC and try to modify the grant?
If we would have all come to the conclusion that no way do we want HOV lanes down this corridor, then that would completely change the grant funding and its applicability. I mean, who knows how much weight our recommendation has, but if this group would have said that, it might have changed some things. But so we're not saying that. We're saying we're in support of the the HOV lane in the design with all these other things.
If,
go ahead, Rick.
Yeah. Okay. So the first statement, A, an urge Puget Sound Regional Council to allow maximum flexibility in design. I guess that's a way of saying that maybe we can convince them to not design the HOV lane and the lane width and everything else for us, that we can have a voice in this. Early on, when Mark presented, one of the concerns we had was that the grant included an HOV lane from Pacific to Portland, which would obviously take away some pedestrian amenities because you've only got so much space between the buildings. So having that as a precondition kind of determines the design. So if we accept this grant, we're pre-designed. We've given up a lane all the way through the TOD district and the neighbor, what you're calling the neighborhood district, to not to a downtown orientation or to a people orientation, but to a transit expressway. We're saying if we accept this grant, we're making Puyallup Avenue a freeway, not a pedestrian-oriented district or not a pedestrian-friendly district. One of the things, I live here all the time, you know that, and I see the people from Kathy's building coming across the street, and that's one of the conditions that I'm watching all the time, is that it's frightening. There are no crosswalks. The traffic is moving. There are no stop signs from D Street to A, and so the people, they have little kids, and they don't know what to do going out into the street. If we make an HOV lane that is given over to so buses can move faster, that will be wrong for what we're trying to do in building a neighborhood, making a people-oriented neighborhood. I agree that the HOV lanes from G to Portland make perfect sense. Go 40 miles an hour down there, but not through the downtown core. So if that is a requirement of providing an HOV lane from Pacific to D or to G, then I would support not accepting this grant, because we can, it's pre-designing the whole project. Why even have input? So that's like kind of my feeling and many others in the neighborhood who are trying to create a neighborhood. I realize we're not a neighborhood yet, but we still have the potential to become one. And like Brian said, once the street's designed, it's not going to change again for another 50 years. So we better do it right this time. So let's take our time and do it right, and not just take this grant, $2 million, and say, oh, well, the grant told us we have to make this into fast lanes and eliminate pedestrian orientation.
I do want to clarify, I guess, a couple of things. I think I've seen a couple items in the chat on this vein, but I think one of the dangers is when people think of an HOV lane, they immediately think of the freeway, which is the far lane on the left and thus the fastest lane in theory. And the idea that things are moving fast in a lane like that is not necessarily the case when we're talking about a bus lane. This is really more about buses moving smoothly than it is about them moving fast. They obviously have to continue to follow the speed limits and everything like that. And I think in the letter, the discussion here was obviously about also having traffic calming amenities and things like that to slow everybody down, particularly as you go through the core. The other piece I just mentioned is that in what I've heard from Public Works, that the basic idea of having four lanes through the area is probably kind of the minimum just from a traffic flow perspective, at least based on their current modeling. And so at some level, even if one of those lanes wasn't dedicated to be a bus lane, it would probably be a general traffic lane anyways and likely take up about the same amount of space regardless.
I'd also like Tina Lee, could you speak to some of that, please? Tina, are you there?
I'm here. Sorry, I was trying to get my mute off. I mean, what I can speak to is how buses are traveling. Likely, I feel like you shouldn't say HOV lane. You should probably say BAT lane, business access lane, or transit lane, or something else, because there's a real misrepresentation, expressway and HOV. These are transit supportive elements to help people move through the corridor, but these buses are not speeding. Generally, transit buses, when you look at their average speeds, it's actually lower than a car because they are having to stop at bus stops and they're stopping and going as people are getting on and off. So we will be bringing people to the businesses along the corridor. We will be picking residents who live along the corridor up to travel either north, south, downtown, or to make connections to other buses. So I hear this, you know, the bus is speeding a lot. And when you often will hear me say faster. What I mean by faster is not that the bus is going above a speed limit or that it gets to go faster than a car. It's making it comparable to someone traveling a car because you have elements that have been added to make transit more efficient, like a dedicated lane or maybe transit signal priority at intersections. Maybe less bus stops because there's stations where people are getting on and off with, like, say, like our BRT corridor. And there are other elements put in at those stations, which, again, make it more efficient for someone to be loading. So I think that's what I can add just, you know, on the fly.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Kathy, did you have something?
I learned how to raise my hand. I'm so excited. Just listening and trying to envision what everybody's talking about, it almost feels like two different neighborhoods that people are talking about. There's a group of people talking about large sidewalks, walkability, retail, people out in the streets, and then others talking about a transit corridor. And if it wasn't a bus lane, then it would be four car lanes. I'm having a hard time in my mind putting those two neighborhoods together. And especially with the limited space that we have on Puyallup Ave. And I'm obviously, because I have a lot of residents down there, I'm leaning more towards the pedestrian neighborhood than the transit corridor. But I don't know how you mesh those two. It along Puyallup Ave, I don't think you can have a dedicated bus lane, three car lanes, bike lanes, and expanded sidewalks. Just take cars out of it. And expanded sidewalks trying to create the neighborhood that we're talking about with easy walking back and forth across the street. I'm almost hearing two different neighborhoods as I'm listening to people talk. And that's, I'm not offering one up over the other. I'm just saying, I don't know how they're all viable. They're both viable at the same time.
I absolutely agree with you, Kathy. I think it is two separate neighborhoods. And I think one thing that this grant is doing is saying it's not. That if we accept this, if the city accepts this grant, it's saying that it's one street. It's Puyallup Avenue, and we're going to design it from Pacific to Portland. And we'll have input. We'll urge them to design differently. But to make it two separate neighborhoods, the only opportunity we have to do that is not to accept this grant and to go ahead and design it that way. Like two different neighborhoods. One that's transit, a transit corridor from the bus station, or G or E, to Portland, and the other is a TOD, pedestrian-oriented neighborhood, with even wider sidewalks than there are now, perhaps, and fewer lanes, and more traffic calming. Cobblestones to slow, really slow people down, so that the little kids I see being led across the street over here, and the high school, they're not taking their lives into their hands to hope that the traffic will stop. So that's my hope. And I don't see that possibility if we accept this grant with the stipulation that there's a bus HOV lane at a certain width that starts us off there.
Mr. Chair, sorry for the interruption. We have been trying to get Mark online, and I think he was jumping from panelists to attendees and with phone numbers, whatnot. I'm not sure if we have figured that out, but he has been listening in, would like to chime in. So good. I just want to acknowledge that when he is available, you might want to call on him. And the group, I'm sorry for interruption again. I know a couple of members have their hands up, but the group's first question would be to ask Mark if this letter is critically needed. Secondly, if the group is willing to provide a support, to indicate support for the city to pursue the grant. And thirdly, and number three, if the group can the group stay on the high level principles rather than going into detailed discussion at detail level. Thank you.
I'd like to make a comment too about what Rick just and Kathy mentioned. It feels like instead of having this great opportunity to redesign Puyallup Avenue, we're having to design Puyallup Avenue around a grant proposal instead of saying what is best for Puyallup Avenue and for going forward for the future of the community and how we blend the transit needs and the future development of the Dome District. It feels like we're doing it backward to me, because this road has to be in place for 50-100 years, and we're just at such a critical infancy stage with the redevelopment of the Dome District. It's hard to do this now and trying to set the stage for what's going to come forward in the next 5 years. That's my frustration. And we're having to do it in a Zoom call and in such a short, rushed time frame in such an important infrastructure street and the money that's going to be involved. And like you just mentioned, we can't go back and redo this.
So I'd like to ask whether it's Brian or Justin or Chris, I'm not sure, but doesn't the transportation master plan identify this corridor as a freight, a high freight and high occupancy corridor?
Justin will correct me if I say something wrong, but the basics of the transportation master plan is that it identifies it as a conflicted corridor that needs to accommodate freight and transit and bikes and pedestrians. And I mean, that is ultimately the challenge, is almost every mode is trying to be accommodated on this one corridor. And that's why, you know, everybody's not going to get everything and there needs to be some balance. That's why this discussion about Puyallup Avenue has been going on for a couple of years, and there hasn't been a magic solution identified yet. And that's why if we move forward into the design process, there will be probably another year worth of detailed design conversations. And at some level, that's why I think the idea of the modified letter was to back out a level, recognize that we're early in the process. In fact, there is still significant design work to happen to figure out some of those details and what that perfect balance point is, as an opportunity potentially to move forward. I do want to make sure, I know we have a couple other people with hands up too, but I don't know, Justin, if you wanted to add anything to that.
Conflicted corridor. The city should be investing in studying those things, like 11 of them.
Say again.
Just a commentary.
He confirmed that it's a conflicted corridor, yes. It's a tough one.
I know that my fellow Commissioner Yvette Mason has been waiting to speak. He might have more on it.
Go for it, Yvette.
Thank you. So at Transportation Commission last week, I think it was just last week, staff showed a couple of new cross-sections. I believe they called them hybrids. Jennifer Camerzell has those. And the alternative showed ped bike focus, included transit lanes. One had parking on one side. I think the other doesn't have parking, but it beefed up the parking on the side streets. I urge, now Brian, I don't know if you have those or if Jennifer showed those to you. It was fairly recent that she showed them to us. I'm sure she could send them to you. And I believe she's on this call if you want to ask her about those. So that one of my comments. My second comment was on the outline letter where you talk about freight. My only caveat, and please know, I appreciate all the work that was done and putting all those comments in the spreadsheet and this outline, but one of the issues that I know came up at the last meeting was trying to skinny the lanes down as much as possible as a traffic calming measure. And because this is a freight corridor, I think 11 feet is the minimum by NACTO on the width of lanes. And so I hear you when you're saying you're trying to be pedestrian oriented and to honor that, but you start making some of the cuts and you could keep an eye to safety on safety. That's all I have to say, because if you get too narrow and have an 8.5-9 foot wide truck in a 10 foot lane, that's not safe.
Yeah, thanks, Yvette. I think the hybrids were part of what was shown to the TODAG in December as well.
Okay, so this group has seen those?
Yeah, that spurred on part of the conversation about parking. As you say, the hybrids included one version had no parking and one version had parking only on one side.
Well, one of the charts that Jennifer showed us that is with the development of some of the parking, and it was back-end parking on the side streets, I think it was only a loss of two spots. And I thought we were talking hundreds of spots, but it was only a loss of two parking spots. And I know that was something that resonated with the Transportation Commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, it's a little after six. I think I'm going to give us another 5 or 10 minutes.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
If I may, Mark asks us to speak. Can Mark go ahead speak?
Please do. Go ahead, Mark. Mark DeAndrea with Public Works, are you there?
Mark, I cannot unmute you because I'm not a host. Can you unmute yourself and speak?
He's not responding to my request either.
I can't unmute him either.
Is he on his phone? Do you know? I can't remember. Is it *9 or something like that?
He was on his phone and then he turned into not phone and he was able to raise hand from his phone, but now I don't see it.
So let's, I guess, wait till he can get on. I want to say a couple of things. We keep getting into the weeds of the design and what it could be, 10 feet, 11 feet, 12 feet. We're not talking about that right now. We'll have an opportunity to speak to that when the design happens. So what we want to do instead is, in general, come to a consensus that we can send this recommendation letter. And I want to speak directly to the neighborhood business group. You guys are now concerned. First, you were concerned with parking and the streetscape, pedestrian-oriented activation. So I think those are solvable as we have been talking about. We've commented on these.
Chair?
Yes.
Chair? I have Mark on my phone. Maybe he can talk.
Okay, we're getting a lot of feedback from you, but hopefully that'll work out. Let's give it a try.
We can't hear anything, Yvette, if you're doing it right now.
Yeah, I'm just going to call in. Oh, no, wait a minute.
There he is.
Oh, I have echo.
You got a bad echo.
Thanks for that. Hold on.
Okay, bye-bye. He's going to try calling back in directly. There was too much feedback.
Okay. Look, I guess I want to play devil's advocate a little bit. We don't know when another funding source, if another funding source will happen or might happen for this project. I mean, I don't want to say this could be the only opportunity in the next 5 or 10 years, but it could be to redevelop the corridor. So directly speaking to the business group, I don't want you to be afraid of an HOV lane because, as Tina tried to explain, it's simply a dedicated lane. It's not a high-speed bus lane or anything like that. It's simply dedicated so that HOVs, including automobiles, can travel through it without, you know, having to sit in traffic in the other lanes. So I don't think you should be afraid of that terminology, because especially we've shown there's 100-foot, somewhere between 95 and 100-foot right-of-way between the buildings, and all these things to some degree can fit. And I think we need to move forward with a recommendation similar to this draft letter. So I'd like you to be on board, and if you want to add any further, you know, caveats or additions or subtractions to the language, that would be fine. Can you guys agree to that?
Can I ask a question about that, Imad?
Sure.
On the DOD on segment 2, how is that neighborhood district distinguished between the TOD district? I'm just concerned with C Street being a very significant corridor,
mm-hmm,
traveled by pedestrians during dome events, and with the housing project right there,
right,
on C Street. So I don't know how you're distinguishing those two.
Well, we're not identifying the specifics of the distinction, if I may, but we're saying they ought to be treated a little bit differently because of their, their location.
Okay.
At least we're making that statement. The future design, as and we're going to be involved in it, will will be able to make those decisions on how, what the distinctions are.
And this includes crosswalks, correct?
Absolutely.
This redesign?
Okay. Pedestrian safety and
yes,
all of the above. Mark, are you there?
I am, and I really appreciate everyone's patience, and I apologize for the difficulties tonight. It's kind of my day off, so I'm not exactly in the same environment I usually am in. A couple things I wanted to say. This whole letter, back to Justin's question, this whole letter and the involvement, the extensive involvement with the Dome District representatives is because Public Works and the city itself values the feedback and, you know, the comments we received from the Dome District representatives. So we want to make sure, we wanted to make sure early on before we're going forward, if what we had in the grant would work and if all these seven or eight issues we have, we could work on through the design process. When we left our conceptual design process back in 2018, you know, we heard parking was a major issue. We heard this HOV lane was a major issue. The HOV lane is part of the grant, right? We can't move forward without it. It's not going to go away. We talked about it possibly going away earlier in meetings, and then I thought we got to a point where everybody was okay with the HOV lane because we started that discussion with PSRC, and that discussion kind of led us to the point where, A, we were going to lose money, or maybe we could lose the entire grant if we pulled the HOV lane out. But we did get to a point, I thought, in one of our many meetings where it was okay to keep the HOV lane in. So we got back in contact with PSRC and said, no, we're okay with that now, and we're going to continue to work through the design process with everyone involved, including the TODAG group, as well as the Transportation Commission group, and everyone else who really commented during our open houses and public outreach process. And one of the things we're going to look at, too, once we start the design process, is really just go confirm what our traffic study is saying, which really is only 20 years from now, which might be the point when Puyallup Avenue is actually built out. I don't know, because we have 10 years to accumulate $25 million, which we don't have. You know, we only have $2.1 million now, and that's design money. And I don't think anybody wants to give back, you know, design money at this point, because we need that work completed before we can get construction money, or at least it helps. So that's where we are. Our current traffic study does show that we need four lanes because it is a transit corridor, a major transit corridor in the city. It is a freight corridor in the city, and we have to accommodate those needs as well. So we can do that, and we can have wide sidewalks and cafes and things like that, but this gets back to parking. So, you know, some of the most successful cities I've seen really don't even have any parking on their main boulevard. So they have some, but the parking is even behind the facilities. You know, they have parking lots that run a block or two. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, I would hate to lose, what was it, eight spots between C and E streets to, you know, I would hate to build those eight spots and lose the potential for sidewalk cafes and wide sidewalks, right? I'd rather, to me anyway, it makes sense to lose parking on one side or even on both sides for a block or two so you can put really wide sidewalks in, really nice planting, pedestrian level lighting, sidewalk cafes. And really, that becomes the core of the corridor, the core of this district. And I think that's how you start to attract those kinds of groups and make those connections to neighboring type facilities, neighboring type districts. I think right. All that really matters. And like we're saying, if you take out parking on one side of the street, it's only eight spots you're going to lose, and then you're going to put in 20 spots right next to your building. So,
Mark,
I don't know. It's okay. Sorry,
Mark. I'd like to say the parking issue is okay. We've already covered that, and it seems the recommendation or the consensus is we're okay to lose some spots as long as we have pedestrian-oriented amenities along the sidewalk. So that's okay.
And I think you're going to have that. Yeah, okay. And I think we'll work with you all the way through the design to do that.
Okay. Now the concern has switched from parking to what sounds like the HOV lane running through the TOD segment. So we tried to, Tina and I both tried to indicate that they're dedicated lanes and that the speeds of the buses or the vehicles will not necessarily be greater, like a freeway, in the HOV lanes along Puyallup Avenue.
And I would just offer that we should just stop calling them HOV lanes. Perhaps they were submitted to the grant as an HOV lane. I could be wrong. They're not HOV lanes.
They were.
Okay.
I mean, the effect. What we're doing is we continue to inflame a thought. You hear HOV, you hear I-5 HOV, and that's not what this is. So,
right. Okay.
Bat lanes is what they're really intended to be.
Okay. Good point.
And I would also add that the management of that lane is really, it hasn't been determined yet. So we don't know if it's going to be a bat lane for, if it's going to be a bat lane all day. Would it be a bat lane just during peak periods? Would it be an HOV lane during peak periods? You know, so, and I think there's a lot of flexibility there as well. I don't see, you know, and I know, Rick, you're very concerned about speeding, especially in that section, and you see it now, but, you know, they're not going to be driving any faster than they are later. In fact, there's a very good chance with sidewalk cafes and, you know, enhanced intersections, enhanced crosswalks, that people are going to be driving slower.
Mm-hmm. Traffic calming methods, bulb outs.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So does anyone, so Li Huang, can I ask you, how many days can we give the group to finalize their comments on this draft number 2?
The current plan is for the letter to go to the Transportation Commission for their review and consideration at their next meeting on February 17th.
Okay.
The agenda for that meeting goes out, I think, Thursday prior to, which would be February 11th. So I would like Imad, you to sign off the finalized letter the day before. That means February 10th. That give ourselves from tomorrow 2 weeks from tomorrow to have the letter drafted, circulated for final comment and signed off. 2 weeks.
Okay. So what I'd like to recommend is that we update some of the language on this draft number 2, including the HOV lane nomenclature. We can call it a bat lane, and some of the other few comments that have come up. I'd like to then circulate that draft number 2 again to the whole group and give you about a week to respond by either adding or subtracting information so that we can finalize the draft by the dates set. So it sounds like about the 16th, 15th or 16th of February to get it out in time. Does anyone object to that?
Sounds good.
Okay. I think our time is up. I'm going to have to defer some of these items again. I hate to do that, but is there anything vital that we need to cover, Li Huang, in about 2 minutes?
Brian?
I'll just mention a couple quick things, and this is information in the packet and really in preparation for the next meeting. So at the next meeting, we will have another round table. And then in addition, we'll be again talking about the Portland Avenue light rail station area. Wanted to get back to that topic. And so there were a couple questions that had come up in previous meetings. One of those, there's information in the agenda packet that went out about ridership projections. Sound Transit doesn't have specific bi-mode ridership projections of how people will get to those stations, but they did provide the overall ridership for both stations. And there is some information in there bi-mode specific to the Tacoma Dome area, the existing station at Tacoma Dome. So that may give you some indications of at least current mode access. And then in addition to that, in the packet, there's also some information from Pierce Transit, similar on ridership. And then lastly, as I say, in preparation for next month's meeting, where we talk about Portland Avenue Station, there is information from Sound Transit on the two design alternatives that are being considered, as well as the rating sheet that had been put together by the TODAG last year that goes over kind of the design principles. And so the hope is that folks over that month, kind of homework, I guess, will take a look at that information from Sound Transit, from Pierce Transit, and the design alternatives, and kind of work through those rating sheets. Yeah, Mad's got them up on the screen there. And that can be sort of a prompter for our discussion at the February meeting.
Brian, would it be possible to send just that sheet out that you have on the screen now and ask people to get their comments back so they could be summarized before the meeting?
Yeah, we will do that.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Brian. So before we adjourn, any last comments from anyone regarding any of the topics, especially Puyallup Avenue?
I would ask that we be apprised of the Sound Transit conversation moving forward in light of the working group meeting, because that could have serious impacts for the whole neighborhood. And that we may want to also consider at some point submitting a letter with our recommendations on that.
Carrie, are you referring to the realignment, the budget issues?
Yes, I am.
The system-wide budget
issues. $1 billion, I think.
Okay. Yeah, we can talk to Sound Transit about whether, what might make sense to continue to share about that. It's a long discussion going on, obviously, at the regional level. And I think my sense is we will probably be continuing on with our conversations hear about these stationaries regardless. That may ultimately affect timing, but yeah, we will check in with Sound Transit on that.
Okay, really briefly, our future meetings coming up are going to include more roundtable discussions, the Portland Avenue station area discussions, more Puyallup design project discussions, and BRT quiet zone update and our work plan and schedule. So still a lot on our plate, and with that, I want to thank you all for being here tonight and for all the great input. And we'll call it adjourned.